Talk about FSU getting screwed, the system that screwed them, the committee that screwed them, and then these four really good teams and two really good semifinal games we get. Plus, our last small sample Heisman, and say something nice of the year.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
If the committee really thinks, you know, if you don't have Jordan Travis, you guys really aren't any good, why the hell are they ranked fifth? They should be ranked eighth. Are you going to tell me that they're better than Georgia?
Russ Dellinger.
I am shocked. I was absolutely floored when the Alabama logo came up on screen.
And SI's Pat Forty.
So that's what they've done here is they've basically predicted that even if Tate Rodemaker comes back, Florida State's not going to be good enough. And so they threw out the baby, they threw out the bathwater, and they threw out a 13-0 team.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod. The nightmare in Grapevine. The nightmare hit. And the committee was screwed. They thought they were going to have themselves some little weekend of watching football and eating cream corn. And no, now they got to don the Kevlar. Boo Corrigan. Don't go to the ACC meetings. If you do sit far. Oof.
Far from Michael Alford. Yeah.
We have no idea what the scene at the Florabama, the famed bar we love, that's like... Does the line cut through the bar? I don't know if it does. It's right there.
Yeah.
It just made me brawls all day. Number one, Michigan will play number four, Alabama, in the Rose Bowl on January 1st. Following number two, Washington, number three, Texas, in the Sugar Bowl. We're going to get to Florida State very quickly. Just a quick note. That's a hell of a doubleheader. That is a hell of a doubleheader right there.
Incredible.
But let's start with the anger, because that's who we are. We hate.
Oh yeah.
We pick on people. We feel for the underdog here. Pat, you have the floor here.
Okay. There are many things we have covered extensively on this podcast, including the fact that the four-team playoff never made sense with five power conferences. Basic math failure. As Dan has always put it, it's a playoff designed by people who didn't want a playoff. But they have been really lucky that it hasn't come back to bite them in the ass very much, very often. But this time it sure did. And so you end up with five deserving teams from five different power conferences, and somebody's got to go. And that team is Florida State. 13-0, wins the ACC and gets ejected in favor of Alabama, which vaults up from being not very close to being in this thing. And I do think Florida State got screwed. I understand the suspicion, I guess the belief, that Alabama is going to provide a better game than Florida State. But I don't like the way this came down. I don't like it for Florida State at all. Basically, what they are, this is it, and who's it said it? Mike Alford said it, or somebody said that they chose predictive competitiveness over proven performance, subjectivity over fact. They have become a committee of prognosticators. And that's basically the thinking, is that, well, we think Alabama is going to play better in the tournament than Florida State is. Here's the thing with that. If they judge that at all based on Florida State's game against against Louisville in the ACC championship game, it's flawed. That game should be a complete toss-out, because Brock Glenn's never going to see the field again this year unless Tate Rodemaker gets hurt again. But he's the third-string quarterback, true freshman, had barely played all year. He gets thrown into that game. They win the game. That should be all that mattered about Saturday night. It should not be, oh, they look bad. Wow, they look bad. Yeah, they look bad. They're the third string 18-year-old in there who was an early enrollee out of Memphis. He's not going to play in the playoff. Tate Rodemaker would have been back. So what they're basically saying is they took Florida State's road win over a rival on November 25th in which Rademacher played and said, yeah, I guess that team isn't good enough. They didn't look very good. What happened earlier that day? Alabama played 6-5 Auburn, which was coming off a 3-touchdown loss to Mexico State and needed a miracle 4th-and-31 to win that game. Jeez, if they'd have made referendum based on that one game, Alabama would have been in some trouble. That would have been a bad game to make a referendum out of. And so that's what they've done here, is they've basically predicted that even if Tate Rodemaker comes back, Florida State's not going to be good enough. And so they threw out the baby, they threw out the bathwater, and they threw out a 13-0 team.
I agree on pretty much every point, actually. I think that two things can be true here. Number one, Alabama is a better team than Florida State and would beat them on a neutral field. The second thing true is that Florida State put together, because they did not lose and won a power conference, in one game still with their backup, in their third stringer, that they are deserving to compete for a national championship. We talked about it on the show, and the CFP talked about it quite a bit. But it's the best versus the most deserving kind of argument. I thought Booger McFarland on ESPN said something really interesting. It was a good point about how, if you start with arguing the best team, you end up looking at the schedules and who you played, who you lost to, who you beat. And the schedule, if you look at the schedules, then that takes you back to the most deserving team in the resume. I am shocked. I was absolutely floored when the Alabama logo came up on the screen. Just cannot believe that the committee, honestly, that they had the balls to do it, that they had the balls to put in the, quote, best team, as they're assigned to do by the CFP, whatever, doctrine. But should that doctrine be altered? I don't know. The bottom line, I think, and I'll say this lastly, is thank goodness we have an expanded playoff coming, because this system with not just four, but how subjective it is that you're relying on a committee, which, again, I think we would all struggle. I've sat in that room on the mock committee. I've talked about on the show about all the analytics and the eye test and all this stuff. The quicker we can get to where a majority of the field gets into a playoff by what they do on the field, by automatic bid, the better. And we're getting closer to making that, thankfully, a reality.
Yeah, it's the system, right? Somebody was going to get screwed today, this Sunday. So you're going to have to make a call and say either a 13-0 Florida State team is out, or the SEC champion, a one-loss SEC champion that's won 13 of the last 17 titles. Now, should that matter? Because it's a one-year thing? I guess we should forget that. In theory, we should. But everyone's going to be like, where's the SEC? Or a Texas team that beat Alabama. So there was no good choice. Mm-mm. Something bad was going to happen. So when I think you guys all agree, it's not that you're like pounding the table, the FSU has to be in over Alabama or Texas or whatever. It's just someone was going to get screwed, and this is how they got mm-hmm. screwed. I think that we have the four best teams. My problem from the start on this has always been, I hate this. You want to limit subjectivity. You want automatic pass for people to play their way in. You want to make the subjectivity to be, are we taking Mizzou or are we taking Penn State? And then you're not going to feel bad because, hey, you know what? You lost a couple times. You're not going to have Jordan Travis, one of the pinnacle guys we have as a player and by all accounts, a person in the sport. Devastated, heartbroken, he wrote. In so much disbelief right now. I wish my leg broke earlier in the season so you all could see this team is much more than the quarterback. Yikes.
Yeah, painful. Like,
So this is the system we have. The thing about the committee and their rankings are part of the problem. They shouldn't even rank all these teams out. We shouldn't have week-to-week rankings. The system and the arrogance and the chase for the last dollar of a Tuesday night show between two college basketball games set everything up for failure and have always, and everyone who's listened to this pod for a long time, as I'm reiterating themes from a long time, if the committee thinks Florida State isn't any good because they don't have Jordan Travis, and I think that's unfair to do because they won. Who cares if they threw for 55 yards? They knew they were going to win. Michigan didn't do anything. Michigan didn't play they didn't play aggressive football the way they did against Ohio State on Saturday night against Iowa because they knew Iowa was never going to score. Just run it, punt, whatever, man. Run the clock. Why did Michigan run 32 straight times against Penn State? Because they knew if they ran 32 times against Penn State, they'd win the game. You change, you alter. There are injuries. There's this or that. Florida State did every single thing they could, and I hate that it's like, well, their quarterback threw for 55 yards. Who cares? They won. They had seven sacks. They rushed the ball 170 yards. They did all the stuff to win games, and when winning doesn't matter, that's terrible. And that's where we're at. But if the committee really thinks, you know, if you don't have Jordan Travis, you guys really aren't any good, why the hell are they ranked fifth? They should be ranked eighth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to tell me that they're better than Georgia?
Right. Yep.
Because if you look at them, you go, hell no. Georgia kill these guys. And so wouldn't Ohio State, and so wouldn't Oregon. So when you say they're fifth, and they shouldn't even put out these rankings, they say, here's our four, we're done. You say, oh, they're in the mix, right? But they have to do rankings. It's their logic, they tell on themselves, right?
Yes.
And that's like as just an exercise, an intellectual exercise. That's where I'm always just like, oh, my head hurts. These guys suck. They don't have Jordan Travis. Alabama's just better. And Georgia isn't?
Right.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where you just like, and I feel in part for the committee because this is the TV show, the system these guys set up when they didn't want to do a playoff. Okay, you want the simplest playoff 10, 12 years ago when they were designing this was six teams, six. They were more into saving the bowl industry, protecting the Rose Bowls, time slot, things like that. They weren't about, hey, let's have a good playoff. A 16 playoffs, you have six major bowls, you play four, you play two, but then the Rose, we're not moving off of January 1. And then everyone was, we're not just giving them that the semifinal every year. And they're all arguing over stuff like that. And you're like, guys, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you listening to these guys? Why are you listening to the bowl industry? Well, they've been around a while. So what? If they had done what they were supposed to do and gone to 12, then we wouldn't have the problem. If they had just gone to six, we wouldn't have the problem. But they didn't care about setting up a good system. They cared about taking care of bowl industry and ESPN with a dumbass committee show. And that's what they did. And now you got this thing and you got a guy going, God, I wish I busted my leg earlier. We'd be a little better. And you're like, God, this is some warped ass stuff. And that doesn't even get into the alliance, which I will. I called them dumbasses on this podcast and got called and said, oh, you don't understand. I said, you guys are dumbasses for not jumping that playoff expansion. ACC. Well, here you are. So you guys talk about that. I don't know. What else you got? Bet. doesn't have to be the alliance. Could be other stuff, but
no. I think Ross is teed up on the alliance. So I'm gonna let him hit that about 350 down the fairway.
There we go.
But the one other thing I wanted to bring up here. Who in the when there have been close calls historically in this playoff situation, who gets the breaks? Ohio State gets the breaks. Alabama gets the breaks. The SEC gets the breaks. The Big Ten gets the breaks. That's who wins the judgment calls, and that's what happened here. And I'm going to remind you of something we talked about in September on this podcast, which was, God, the SEC is pretty bad. Mm. It's really been disappointing. Embarrassing non-conference performance by the SEC. Then they start playing each other, and everybody's like, oh, SEC. Whoa. This is good league. They are living, perhaps justifiably, on past precedent and past performance. But you've got to throw that out eventually, I think, and think about this season. You know, would Alabama, yes, Alabama absolutely would be favored against Florida State, but we are basing a lot of the SEC's prowess on what has happened before, not what happened this year. They were 7-9 against Power 5 competition, non-conference, including 4-6 against the ACC. This was not a great SEC this year, but they're getting the benefits of the SEC being great in the past.
Yeah, I would say, and again, I don't, that's the problem. I don't really have a problem with Alabama being in this field. I wouldn't have had a problem with any of them. But it's like, we saw they lost these games. The Florida State went out and beat two SEC teams, yep. Neither in Tallahassee. Right. One on the road, one in Orlando. They played LSU.
Yeah, and neutral. That was close to a 50-50 crowd.
Yeah, pretty crowd.
Ross and I were both there.
They beat a good LSU team, the Florida yep. whatever, but Florida played up. That's a rival game. They're 2-0. They play a hard schedule, and you just go, look, so I don't know. I don't really have a – I can't criticize the committee necessarily. I think I'm not like, oh, my God, this Alabama. But, you know, look, like you said, that Alabama didn't look good against Auburn. Didn't look good against Arkansas. They didn't look good against South Florida.
Oof.
Mm-mm. You know, so it's not, I don't know. It was just an impossible situation there. And it's really tough when you're like, hey, we're doing this because of injuries. And now you're playing a different way. I don't really care if they ever throw the ball as long as they win. Their defense at Florida State is terrific. And I don't care what Vegas thinks. Vegas told me Washington beat Oregon once, and then they told me they were 9.5-point favorites, and they lost again. Like, Vegas told us TCU couldn't stay in it. It's just so much inconsistency, and this committee's kind of stuck, and it's just going to be great when it's like, play your own way in. At worst case we ever have will be two undefeated group of five teams. And if that happens, which almost never does, but if that happens, then we would have kind of a tricky debate. Would they put them in over like a two loss? But other than that, I don't really feel bad. Like, it's going to be fine. This is, man, it's tough for Florida State.
It is. And it like, you know, I think we maybe mentioned it about the Jordan Travis tweet that he sent out, basically apologizing. I'm sorry I got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry I cost.
Yeah.
Cost my school a playoff spot. That is incredibly tough to swallow. And it's awful to see. So the alliance.
Yeah.
Give
us a history lesson here, Ross.
Let's go to timeline here. January, I'm checking back to January 2019. This is at the site of the national championship game. Mark Keenum, the Mississippi State president and the chairman of the CFP governing board. There's two governing boards to the CFP. There is a board of presidents, one each from an FBS league in Notre Dame. And then there's a secondary board of commissioners that really make the decisions. And then the presidential board rubber stamps them. And the commissioners are obviously one each from FBS, one FBS commissioner in Notre Dame athletic director, Jack Swarbrick. And those are the two governing boards. Mark Keenum went to Bill Hancock in 2019 at the championship site and said, let's work on expanding a playoff. Bill Hancock created a subcommittee made up of Greg Sankey, Bob Bowlesby, Craig Thompson, and Jack Swarbrick, a four-person subcommittee. And they met for about a year and came up with a playoff model, and then COVID hit. They were going to introduce it in the spring, summer of 2020. COVID hit. It got all paused. It was delayed a year into an introduction in June 2021 is when they introduced the model. There was a thought that they could pass that, and it needed unanimity from the commissioners and then a recommendation, a unanimous recommendation from commissioners to the presidents, where the presidential board, the 11, would have to vote 11-0. So there was a thought that in June 2021, when the playoff model was introduced, it could get passed by the fall, or certainly by the winter. By January 2022, for sure, right, that it could get passed. And there was a thought, Greg Sankey certainly thought, and many others, I believe, that if you passed it by January 2022, and certainly earlier, that you could start the expanded playoff a year and a half later, this year, right, 2023. But then in July of 2021, about a month and a half after the model was introduced by the subcommittee, the word leaked that Oklahoma and Texas were going to the SEC. A few weeks later, the alliance formed, and although at the time they said it wasn't in response to that, obviously it was in response to that.
And that was the Pac-12, the Big Ten.
Pac-12, Big Ten, in the ACC. Yeah, got together, kind of said their mission was, they're built around the educational and athletic mission, like-minded schools, preserving college athletics, blah, blah, yeah, blah.
They were up in their feelings.
So yes, they were. They were ticked off, right? They were ticked off. And so they basically formed a voting block. Even though they said they were not going to, they did. And for 16 months, they delayed playoff expansion. And it certainly frustrated others in the room. You know, they met multiple times, never could come to an agreement. Things were, as one of the commissioners told me, cards were never really put on the table from the three commissioners. They never really showed their hand. What is wrong? What are the issues that we could solve here?
Didn't Bob and they Bowlesby never did. And I think up and leave a meeting in the
at
middle?
One point, Bob Bowlesby said, quote, this is bullshit, packed up his bag and walked out of the room. It was a, let's just be honest, it was a purposeful delay, right? Okay? It was. That's what it was. Now, you could disagree with it, agree with it, whatever, but it bogged down and delayed the playoff for 16 months, you know? And yeah, sure, like it's true, right, that they formed the alliance because of what happened, because of the SEC's move to expand. But 10 months after they formed the alliance, you know, and right in the middle of while they were delaying a playoff expansion, the Big Ten poached two Pac-12 teams, alliance on alliance crime,
yep. Yes.
And the alliance folded. And I don't know to this point still what the alliance accomplished, except for delaying the playoff and preventing it from potential, having the potential to start this year. And now we come full circle where an ACC team is left out of a four-team playoff.
There it is. I've had a lot of people say, because I think we all brought up the potential damage here from not having an alliance, from the alliance coming into being and not having the playoff in 2023. And people said, well, yeah, but they did that in response to Texas and Oklahoma. Well, yeah, but how is that responding? What does that do? Yes, what does that do for
exactly.
you?
Exactly.
You know, it was a response, but it wasn't a logical response.
No, they were purposeful. Sankey, exactly. They were just mad at Greg Sankey. That was it. Yeah. So he supports something. I am now opposed. It's like Washington, D.C. government, right? Like, well, one side thinks this, the other side's got to hate it. And you're like, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, it was stupid. They were just mad at Greg Sankey. When all of them would have, they all wished that Oklahoma and Texas had called them.
Sure.
They're just mad they didn't get called. Go ahead.
And let me, that's an important point. Let me say that right now. And I think Greg Sankey has been pretty public about that, is that he said it multiple times now. So I don't think I'm saying anything that's any kind of news, because he certainly told me in private, but he has said it, I'm pretty sure, publicly. Look, Oklahoma and Texas Texas was leaving the Big 12. They were leaving. Where they were going, who knew? Who knows, right? They knocked on the SEC's door, and if the SEC wouldn't have opened it, guess where Texas was going? Either the Big 10 or the ACC. And there was communication with both leagues. I know that.
Yeah, correct.
This is Jim Phillips today. It's unfathomable that Florida State, an undefeated Power 5 conference champion, was left out of the college football playoff. Okay, fine. Their exclusion calls into question the selection process and whether the committee's own guidelines were followed, including the significant importance of being an undefeated Power 5 conference. So he calls into question the process, which calls into question the people doing the process. And it's, you know, Jim Phillips is a very polite guy. It's about as strong of a comment as you're getting out of Jim Phillips. But again, you had a chance, and you didn't expand.
So I think the general theory that we all have is a lot healthier. Like, yeah, it really sucks for Florida State, but what the hell is the committee going to do?
Right. I mean,
like 90, like maybe you think screwing Alabama would have been better than screwing Florida State. Okay. But it's still, it wasn't like, they didn't like that it's through like Penn State in there or something.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, you gave them a horrible system. And prior, I mean, the ACC is a prominent member. They could have pushed for expansion so many times. They could have done the right thing at the beginning instead of not. Instead, they were all fired up about, oh, we got the Orange Bowl. We got to protect the Orange Bowl. You know what? You didn't protect Florida State. This was obvious that it could happen, and now it's happened.
Yeah, oh, I mean, I agree completely that this was, this is a self-own, you might say, that you created a bad system, you went along with a bad system, you obstructed a better system, and now all of a sudden it's biting you. And you can put out statements and all that sort of thing, but you got to also, there needs to be some accountability and ownership of being part of what made this system go and made it sustain itself. The other thing too, you know, Florida State spent weeks, if not months, really almost all summer, going back late spring even, basically trashing the ACC. Like, we're too good for this league. This league is, you know, and geez, maybe they should have been building the league up instead of tearing it down in terms of a perception standpoint. Then people might have thought a little more highly about going undefeated in that league.
All right. Anything else on the selection before we get to the playoff part? Okay.
No, unless you want to talk about what a expanded playoff this year would look like.
Well, I was
going to
do that. Yeah. As Ross points out most weeks, this is what the 12 teamer would look like this year. I'm pretty excited for this 14 playoff. I'm sorry, Seminoles. I do get your anger, but I'm pretty fired up for Alabama, Michigan. So, you know, that's the thing. For the rest of us, it's like, we're still getting something good. But this would be the 12 team. Number one, Michigan would play the winner of Missouri at Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Good game.
Take that. Yep.
Yeah.
This one is juicy. Number four, Alabama would get the winner of Liberty at Florida State.
Mm.
Now, if Florida State is as bad as everyone thinks,
we would know, wouldn't we?
Again, how the hell are you? You're not any good. You don't have Jordan Travis, but you're five. I don't know. True. Washington would yes. get number 10, Penn State at Ohio State.
Oh, boy.
I think they would juice these up and try to avoid conference things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they would flip the 10 and 11 seed.
Okay.
Because it's Georgia, Ole Miss, and Ohio State, Penn State.
Yeah.
They'd probably switch. They're not supposed to, they should.
It would be, yeah. It would have been Ole Miss at Ohio State and Penn State at Georgia. And the Ohio State Ole Miss game would probably play Washington, and then Georgia, Penn State would play Texas. So not only would you get the four, but we would also end up with things like, let's just say seed holds. We'd end up with Oregon, Michigan. And really, if they could just put that damn thing on campus, Florida State, Alabama, Ohio State, Washington, and then Georgia, Texas. And then you get to it's going to be pretty good.
It's not bad.
Pretty, pretty good.
Yeah.
Biggest result of the weekend, Alabama beats Georgia. Ross, you were there. From the start, it was like that was a different Alabama team than the week before. Like, Alabama is a roller coaster, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they were not looking good against Auburn. And then you could just tell in that game, I was like, oh, Alabama's here. And you could tell from the start that Georgia was going to have a fight on its hands here. Thoughts on the game that you watched there? And I mean, this is a 29 game win streak, 2-time reigning national champs. Of course, they're not even in this debate, like barely. It all comes collapsing down in one day for the for the Bulldogs. This is why it's so hard to win three times in a row. You need everything to go right. Didn't look like maybe Brock Bowers was 100%, a few other things, but this is a pretty epic game. So what happened in Atlanta, Ross?
Yeah, it was wild. It was a quintessential, you know, like Nick Saban defensive performance. They were flying around the ball. They were getting pressure on Carson in their DBs, which struck out to me was Alabama's defensive backs. And they might have got away with something every now and then, but they were like glue on Georgia. I mean, no one seemed very open. It was impressive. It was just an all-around impressive performance outside of the first drive. You know, the first drive was this surgical kind of masterpiece. Outside of that, it was pretty dang incredible to watch. And then offensively, you know, look, Milroe holds on to the ball way too long. He's indecisive, you know, but he's super talented. He can run away from you. He can bowl you over. And holy cow, does he have an arm and accuracy? I think they'd be good to, for the next 3.5 weeks, right, to work on his decision making in the pocket. Offensive line, Alabama's offensive line probably had its best game of the year, blocking for him, giving him all the time in the world. And he danced around there, and either he ran or he found somebody. So it was incredible, all the way around. And just, you know, the numbers to Nick Saban in Atlanta and in the SEC championship game, it just boggles the mind. He is 11-1 now in SEC championship games, going back even to his days at LSU. He is, I think it's 19-1 in games played in Atlanta while Alabama's coach. 13 straight, I believe, victories. It's wild. It's just the master does it again.
Yeah, I'm the dumbest person in America because I doubted Nick Saban. I discarded him, said his run was over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here he You're is. A little shaky here now. Shaky, shaky, Pat.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, I mean, no one will remember.
No, not at all. So, no, I will own that. I am amazed. I'm particularly amazed. This is like the parallels from 2021 to 2023 are just incredible, of Alabama staggering around like an absolute bumbling bunch of idiots against Auburn for 58 minutes and then pulling out a miracle win and then showing up in Atlanta like world beaters. And Georgia also getting a case of the Bama freakout that they tend to get. I mean, boy, oh boy, tell you what, Kirby Smart should wake up every day and say, thank you, Keely Ringo, for that pick six. Because if we hadn't won that one, oh, it would be ugly. It would be really ugly because Alabama's in their heads. They're still in their heads. Georgia did not play very well, I didn't think. You know, they've just messed up a lot of stuff in the course of that game. Alabama did play well enough to win, obviously. But, you know, it was a very good, it was a very compelling game. It was close. It was dramatic. It was shocking, basically, to see Georgia unravel kind of like that because of the way they've played for winning 29 straight. But still, just I guess I came away almost even more stunned with Georgia screwing up than with Alabama rising up.
Could not get the run game going.
No.
You know, I think, let's see. Yeah, Milton averaged 3.2 yards a carry, but that included a 17-yarder. Edwards, 3.8. Like, they could not get that push that they've gotten the last couple of years. Said Bowers was good, but not dominant. It just wasn't there. I mean, look at these stats. I mean, Jalen Milroe, 13 to 23, 192, two TDs, but four sacks. He had some critical rushes. Big 30-yarder. They just Alabama'd you. Jalen Milroe has come a long way this season, though. I think I put this out on Twitter. It was like,
he definitely has.
Offensive line and quarterback were a nightmare for Alabama early in the season. They lose to Texas. They bench Milroe. They play their backups and barely beat South Florida. Team looked a mess. And we'd said it across the year. They just kept getting better. And then here they are in the SEC championship game, and their offensive line was pretty good. And Milroe did enough, certainly did enough. And so Nick Saban is as good as he can coach. He still got it. This is not his best team. There's still a lot of really good players on this football team, but it's not his best team. But you know what? He just got Georgia out of the way, and he's sitting there saying, all right, we're alive. We got Michigan. We got Texas. We got Washington. We got a puncher's chance here to humiliate Pat. I think that's his real motivation.
No doubt about it.
Uh-huh, how do you see this Michigan-Alabama game setting up?
Either way. I think it's going to be fantastic. I think both games are going to be fantastic. I would say this, that right now, looking at it, all four teams should go in thinking, we can win the national championship.
Yeah. I don't know how often that's happened.
I don't either. But there is no unbeatable team in the field. As far as focusing on Michigan, Alabama, man, a couple of very strong defenses, a couple of offenses that find ways to move and to score without being, you know, just super well-oiled, prolific, explosive, right? And now Jalen Milroe can fire the ball a mile, and Isaiah Bond can go down and run under it and catch it. They could do that, certainly, I think, more than Michigan can do. But for the most part, I think we're going to be looking at a pretty workmanlike, trench-oriented, defense-first matchup. And to see them playing in the Rose Bowl will be very, very cool with that setting. But, hey, what time's the game going to kick off? We're not going to have the sunset, are we?
Yeah. Why?
We will?
Surely we are. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sugar Bowl is 8:45.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Oh, no. Hell no.
Okay.
Come on now. There's a sunset over the San Gabriel, and it will happen at the start of the third quarter.
Okay.
Take your little
apologies.
This is how we got in this mess.
Yes, it is.
And I know every time we say it, people are like, come on, man. No. But no, really.
Yeah.
It's a sunset.
Here we are.
Yeah. They didn't even move the time when they moved the game to during COVID to Arlington and the sunset over the Walmart.
Right. Yeah.
Across the street from AT&T Stadium. Mm-hmm. Still had to happen at the dome was open.
Yeah.
You'll get yourself.
Thank God we'll have that. Yes. Anyway, I mean, it's going to be a great matchup.
It's a hell of a sunset, too, by the way. I mean, it is a hell of a sunset.
Well, and these are like two, you know, of the proudest / most arrogant programs on the planet. So the fan bases are huge, and, you know, it's SEC versus Big Ten. It has all the elements. This is going to be great.
Some storylines here. Michigan's number one, I think, in all-time wins in college football history. I think Alabama's number two or number three. I guess it depends on which you go with. Ohio State's right there as well. And then they played last year, right, in the Alamo Bowl. And who won that game?
They didn't play. No.
What am I thinking? Washington and Texas played in the
Alamo Bowl. Alabama smoked Kansas State last year.
But the other interesting things of Washington, Texas, you know, of course, Steve Sarkisian is playing his old program in Washington. In Washington's new AD, Troy Dannon, returning to New Orleans. He was formerly the Tulane AD, you know, about 2 months ago. So he'll be coming back to New Orleans. So some interesting storylines there. Just two, epic matchups of. But you could, you know, mostly blue bloods. I think a lot of Washington would call itself a college football blue blood. So it's going to be super exciting. Already hearing from people down in New Orleans about the ticket sales for Washington and Texas. Let's just say there'll be a lot of burnt orange.
Yeah, robust. The biggest Texas Alabama game I remember was Tom Brady's last game at Michigan. He threw four touchdowns. Very exciting game. And it was one of the reasons the Patriots drafted him.
Hmm.
It's like a big comeback game. And I think they played an opener in like 2012.
They did. I covered it.
Yeah.
And it was a blowout.
Yeah. Not a whole lot there. I think Michigan, I keep saying this, although maybe it's not true, because I keep waiting for J.J. McCarthy to really win a game. And he kind of did against Ohio State. He made some really good plays, but his efficiency and ability to avoid turnovers, turnovers to just kill you against Alabama, to kill you against anyone. But if he does not turn the ball over and plays that smart game like he did against Ohio State, I give Michigan a chance. If he plays like TCU where he's giving points away, forget it. This ain't TCU. So he's got to be a lot better. But everything else about Michigan, it travels, right? That was one of the most absurd parts of this weekend, and I didn't see the show, but I saw the thing, was like three out of the five guys on game day picked Iowa to win outright.
How is that possible? How?
Well, I think one was the comedian.
Okay.
So
yeah.
One was McAfee.
One was McAfee. And one was Corso?
Corso.
Or no, not. Might yeah, Corso. Yeah, Corso. Still, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I think they were all trying to
get them
different
off the show. That's stupid.
Legitimately, there's no reason you could possibly pick Iowa to beat Michigan in that game. It's not that anybody can't beat anybody, but to make that pick on national TV is just without the point spread. Because they're like, well, Iowa plays good defense and great special teams. Michigan does it better.
Yeah. I mean, that you're not a serious person if you made that pick. Come on. Get them off the show.
That was insane. But that's the part that of their deal that travels, right? They're gonna, I think one of the best lines of the year was Ross's, they block and tackle you to hell. They just do. Like, they're gonna do that. Diag Partners, Custom Staffing Solutions, stat of the week.
Oh god.
Our friends at Diag Custom Staffing Solutions, Diag Partners. Iowa's offense ranked 133 out of 133. They had just 3,052 yards. They punted for 4,119 yards. First out of 133. So they were the number one number bookends. Worst offense, best punting.
That's Iowa.
Try doing that. Is that in the committee's protocols?
I will say I was at that game, and I was truly shocked at Iowa people who were really dejected, like that they were losing. Like, what did you expect? Hadn't you been watching this train wreck all year? I narrowly missed my prediction that Iowa would not pass midfield. They did twice, but I was dead on in saying they would not score. I predicted 28-0 as 26-0, so good job holding Michigan to 2 points fewer.
Well, the disrespectful halftime totals of half a point, the under hit on both.
Absolutely.
They never stood a chance. And Michigan doesn't beat itself like that. He's too good. He's not. He'll just be like, oh, all right, we're up 3-0. We'll just, whatever, kill clock. We don't care. He's not going to do things that get him beat. It was, that was not good. Okay, Washington. Talked a little about it. Washington, Texas. Fascinating game. These Longhorns look obviously dominant against Oklahoma State. Sark's big word is culture. We've talked about it all season. They started winning the games that they would lose in the past. So even when they're not dominant and they would drop some bad, they'd have bad losses, they didn't have it this year. Washington's just, man, they just took care of business. Such a fun team to watch. Such a fun offense. The Friday night game was very exciting against Oregon. It was a great weekend of football. So now we have kind of two different styles. Michael Penix versus Quinn Ewers. A lot going to happen here. Pat, your initial thoughts on this matchup?
Excellent game. I'm really looking forward to it. Really impressed with both teams and both programs, the way they've been built. And then, yeah, I think to your point, Dan, I think there was a fairly heavy burden on both of them as the seasons were building, and they handled it. Couple wobbly games here and there, but when they got to championship weekend and it's like win and you're in, oh, they played great. I mean, I was so impressed with what Washington did against Oregon. They really took it to them straight from the beginning, jumped on them. Oregon, as a good team does, came back, took the lead, but just like in Seattle, guess what? Washington's like, nope, uh-uh. And, they just have championship metal to them. You are not going to beat them easily. Nobody has beaten them, period, this year, but you're not going to do it easily. they will go down fighting, and they make plays when they have to. And then Texas, yeah, just absolutely steamrolled Oklahoma State, who played no defense. But that's two straight games now where they have just destroyed the competition. And I think they're going in with a lot of confidence and a lot of momentum. We'll see about the health of Xavier Worthy. I would imagine he'll be okay by the time that game rolls around. But like they're finding running backs. You know, Jonathan Brooks got hurt. Keelan Robinson yesterday, 4 carries for 75 yards. Caught a couple passes too. Looked fast as hell. I mean, like Texas is that they have built that roster really well. They're good in pretty much all phases, and they've got enough depth to be able to handle an injury here and there.
I don't know. I don't think I had a very good week of picking games, but I did get the Washington Oregon one. I still can't believe that spread was like it was.
Yeah, no.
I thought Oregon would win the game, but I thought certainly Washington would stay within 10 points. And they just it's been weird. Washington's been weird this year. Sometimes it's Michael Penix and its passing game is great and looks electric and looks like Joe Burrow and LSU's receivers in 2019 with the deep passing. And then sometimes they're just completely off, like the Arizona State game and even Stanford. It's been weird. But man, the two games against Oregon, hoo boy, they were on. And it was impressive. They're getting separation in the secondary. It was really, really impressive. And then Texas just took it to Oklahoma State. You know, you could maybe make an argument that Texas is playing, and I know they had some tight games this year and such, but that they're playing as well as anybody in the country right now. And I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if our final two actually right now would be Texas and Alabama. As crazy that is to say, that's like the first thing that came to my mind when I saw the Final Four.
I can make a case any of them win. I'm looking forward to seeing Washington play like the athletic defense of Texas, or that level of toughness that maybe they didn't have yet. But I don't know. Washington answers every question every time.
They do.
And that was a brilliant game. Like you said, Dylan Johnson, 152, 2 touchdowns, threw the ball twice. Kalen DeBoer is just fun. It's just a fun program. So that is going to be a big matchup.
All right, before we go on to the other parts of the show, let me just ask you guys this. But first blush, we can change our minds, but right now, selections are fresh in the mind. Who's your national champion?
Honestly, Texas is what popped into my head. So I'm going to go with Texas.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. I could see them all winning.
Yeah.
I like I just said earlier, I think the first thing that popped in my head when I saw the bracket was, oh boy, we're going to get Texas, Alabama, and Houston. Holy cow. I'm the same with Dan. I lean toward Texas. I do.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm going Purple Rain. Give me Washington. Mm.
Wow.
They sold me big time with the second victory over Oregon. And I think in the modern day and age, if you can protect the quarterback and you can get the ball downfield to those receivers, you're going to be able to score against anybody.
I don't know what my hesitation, why I didn't think Michigan. Maybe it's they're playing Alabama and it's the long, like Michigan has not trailed in the second half this season.
Wow. Wow.
Never trailed.
That's a remarkable stat.
Like their struggle was the Maryland game.
Mm-hmm.
They won by like, what they went, 7? I mean,
five, like they, I think, 29-24 or something.
Never trailed. They always make plays. They always find a way. Yeah, I probably should have picked Michigan, but I don't know. I'll tell you right now, I don't care who's playing in that. Like, I'll take any of these title games. I'd take every matchup. There's nothing I'm rooting for here.
Right. No, they're all going to be delicious.
Like last year, the TCU upsetting Michigan was really exciting to watch because we rarely get those kind of upsets. But then it's like, yeah. I want to watch Michigan play Georgia.
Yeah.
Right. Or we wanted the Michigan versus Ohio State rematch.
Mm-hmm.
And instead it was like, oh, you know, like on this one, I'll take any. You can shuffle this deck any which way. I'm going to be pretty happy. So that's pretty awesome. How about this? Very quickly, did Jaden Daniels win the Heisman this weekend? Because people seem to be down on Penix. He didn't do enough, or Knicks, or I don't understand how people select votes anymore. People are like, he didn't win a big game. What's his Heisman moment? I don't know what criteria we have anymore. Who's going to win the Heisman? You two tell me.
I think Jaden Daniels is going to win. Yeah, I do. I think that game was not good for Knicks. I mean, he didn't play bad by any stretch, but his passer rating was 144, which is, I believe, his lowest of the year. Yeah, it was. And threw a pick. You know, I think that he might have harmed himself just enough to swing some votes away from himself and towards Daniels. And also, look, Penix beat him twice. And I know these are team games and everything, but Michael Penix going 2-0 against him, I think, should resonate some, too.
Yeah, I think Jaden wins the Heisman. I felt like if Bo Nix had, you know, a really good game and they won, especially late in that game, like if he led some big comeback and put up great numbers, I feel like that would have swayed enough voters maybe that he would have won. But right now, Jaden Daniels' numbers are so incredible that my prediction is that he wins. I don't necessarily expect it to be some landslide, though.
Well, I'm going to wait till next week to get the full Heisman. Let's give out some small sample Heismans. Last ones of the year. We did have a bunch of games. So anyone got a small sample Heisman? Who won the Heisman this weekend?
Sure. I got one for you. Conference USA Championship game. Caden Salter, quarterback at Liberty. Liberty Bibbity is going to a New Year's Six Bowl. Because they pulled it off, won that game to go 13-0, and Salter was ridiculous, as he has been really all year. Threw for 319 yards and 2 touchdowns, 20 of 25 passing against a good New Mexico State team. We've seen him. We've talked about him plenty. And he ran 12 times for 165 yards. So that's 484 yards, I believe, total offense. Not bad. 3 touchdowns. Your team's undefeated. Caden Salter, take a bow. Take the small sample Heisman.
Troy this year won the Sun Belt again, back-to-back years under John Summerall, took over as coach and tearing it up. And in their championship game against App State, Kamani Vidal, I think is how you pronounce his name. Running back. 233 rushing yards. 26 carries, 5 touchdowns. Guy averaged 9 yards a pop. Incredible. Led them to, like I said, the title against App State, 49-23. John Summerall in. Incredible 2 years there. But give it up for Kamani Vidal. Just an awesome performance in a really big game there for Troy.
I'm going to give it to Braden Fisk, who is a Florida State defensive lineman, grad transfer from Western Michigan. 9 tackles against Louisville. 5 solo.
Unblockable. Unblockable.
4.5 tackles for a loss. 3 sacks. Absolute beast. You're right. Unblockable. Louisville couldn't do anything. 6 points. They tried everything they could. They got nowhere. Florida State won that ACC championship and created all this situation because of that defense. He wasn't the only one. Patrick Payton had a hell of a game. Jared Verse had a hell of a game. Tatum Bethune had a hell of a game. But Braden Fisk gets my small sample Heisman for one hell of a Florida State defense that we will not get to see. They will play Georgia, but who the hell knows is going to be in that game.
Yeah,
we will not get to see, and because their quarterback broke his leg. There was one point made online. Should Florida State have just listed Travis just as a game time decision? Like I know he busted his leg, so it'd be kind of hard to hide it. But if they,
yeah,
in the future, if you just claim the injury isn't an injury, would that be the better play? Like, oh no, he might play. Well, we're going to sit him out of caution. Would that have changed? I guess it's kind of crazy stuff. But anyway,
it would have been a tough one, considering how gruesome the video was of him breaking
really
his
work.
Leg.
Didn't really work.
And really
our other gruesome one, Zach Zinter, the Ohio Michigan offensive lineman. I don't know if this is going to be someone's say something nice, but Harbaugh kind of defused the whole Petiti Harbaugh situation by having Big Ten commissioner give the trophy to Zach Zinter. I thought whoever came up with that was a good idea.
Yes, that was clever. Yeah. We can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, I guess. I'm sorry. I'm jumping on everyone's toes. All right. No. We said plenty of mean things. We said plenty of tough things. Can we say something nice? Our final say something nice, maybe. Not really. I don't know. I don't know how many more we do. We didn't play that out. But can we say something nice today? Pat 40, can you say something nice?
I can, and I am going to say yes. I'm going to say something nice about the way the Big Ten kind of worked its way out of the most awkward situation of all the awkward situations in the post-game trophy presentation. And that was it. That they basically, Zach Zinter was Henry Kissinger brokering peace in the Middle East here. They just kind of used him as the go-between so that Petiti didn't have to really interact with Harbaugh. They did, it looked like. Now, I'm not even going to go into the idiocy of how they ran field access up there, but
ooh, the tunnel from issue? Did you have a tunnel issue, I heard,
I
Mr. 40?
Did you punch anyone, Pat?
I did not punch anyone. I did get shoved by a security person. Listen, but
we'll all throw down. You don't mess with the pot. We'll all
mess
come
with
down.
The pod. That's right.
Mm-hmm. I went from 0 to 60 on the temper meter.
And we'll bring Sean. Very quickly. We'll bring Sean.
No one's messing with the Y over here.
Yeah.
I got your back, Pat.
Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
I'm not going to do a whole lot, but I can bring Sean.
Yeah, Sean will end all disputes.
Yes.
Anyhow, but from what I could see from the long distance they kept us at, there was, I think, a brief handshake or cursory interaction between Harbaugh and Petiti. And then they brought Zinter up. They gave him the trophy. So the booing was isolated at that point. Then Petiti moved to the back of the stage, and then he left while they were still doing like the interviews and stuff, and he got absolutely torrentially booed on his way out. But it was like about a 30-second booing, and then he was in a car underneath the stadium and he was gone. So I thought they did actually do a pretty good job of turning that into a nothing burger and letting Michigan kind of have its moment.
All right, I heard he left when Mikey Sandrastrill was doing like an interview. Was he used the?
Yes, that's correct.
Quick note on that. Much fun was made of Michigan's recruiting strategy about 5 years ago of recruiting 3 stars from Massachusetts. And I believe we were guilty on this pod of pointing that out. Like, what are we going? Yeah. Mikey Sandrastrill was one of them, and he's a hell of a lot better than a 3-star. It is
God. He's a
Everett
great
Mass,
player.
Stand up and represent. That kid can play. Whoever ranked him 3 stars was wrong. Michigan was right. So we take back. We say something nice about what we said mean 4 years ago. Ross, got something nice to say?
Yeah. Mountain West Championship game. Boise State, UNLV. Boise State wins 44-20. It caps quite a unique last few weeks in Boise. I think Spencer Danielson, the interim coach, because Boise fired its coach about a month ago. You got an interim coach winning a conference title. I think that's the first time it's ever happened in college football history. Spencer Danielson 3-0, and the Broncos are Mountain West champions. And who knows? He might get the full time job there. By the time you're listening to this, he might already be the permanent head coach. Certainly, he did a remarkable job. He's been at Boise for a while. He was an assistant before that under Brian Harsin. Been there since 2017, and done a great job. Like I said, you pretty unusual circumstances and handled it quite well.
All right, I'm going to say something nice about Bama Rush.
Oh boy,
the sororities or the fraternities down there, or the fraternities and sororities at Michigan, Washington, and Texas. At least you are not the fraternities at Oklahoma State, who are dumping dead longhorns on each other's lawn.
What?
You didn't see this, Pat?
No.
Oh, yeah. A dead longhorn, a longhorn carcass, was dumped on the front lawn of a fraternity called Farmhouse.
Okay. Yeah.
Laying on the lawn. Now, there was a big belief that because it was Hate Texas Week and Oklahoma State was going to play Texas, that somehow these guys had just lost their marbles and decided to throw a dead Longhorn down. Now, again, I am not a country person. I don't know where the hell you get a Longhorn if you're just looking for one.
Stillwater might not be that hard to find.
Still, like, if a cat goes missing for an afternoon in my neighborhood, there's like signs up. It's a big animal. Well, now, apparently this was not Texas related. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. We're not sure. Maybe it's partially Texas related. Maybe it isn't. There is a rivalry between Farmhouse. That's the name of their fraternity. It's going to be the worst fraternity name I've ever heard. Farmhouse. Yeah,
we had that. There was a farmhouse at Missouri when I was in school there, too.
How are their parties? They're either incredible or horrible.
I cannot say I attended one.
But there's a rival to Farmhouse called Alpha Gamma Rho. Mm. And so the belief is, because someone wrote expletive Farmhouse, F Farmhouse, on the Longhorn that was dumped in the yard, that maybe this was a... But that also could have been just a way to throw people off from the Texas Hate Week.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. Mm. The police are saying the horse was died of natural causes. They didn't kill not a horse. It's a, what is it?
Not a horse. Definitely not a horse.
It's a longhorn. What is it, a bull?
Yeah.
Bull, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bull was dead anyway. So they didn't kill a bull. They just, how the hell do you transport something this big? I don't understand any of this.
Do you know how many pickups there are in Oklahoma?
How do you get it into the pickup?
Well, you know,
a hundred guys take need the whole fraternity. Yeah,
you take a whole bunch of fraternity guys and say, go pick up the dead cow. Throw it in there.
They played with more fight than their football team. I'll give them that.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know who's responsible for the dead Longhorn, but it did not inspire your team. And they're gonna pursue this, and one of the fraternities is gonna be in a lot of trouble. Alpha Gamma Rho's national chapter put out a statement saying this does not reflect our values. Gee, I do it. Kind of goes without saying. Let's settle down, people. Let's settle down. We're better than this. We can be better than this. You don't got to be throwing dead animal carcasses on each other's lawn either to motivate the football team or express your hatred of your rival farming fraternity. That's my say something nice. Be more like Bama. The Bama Rush people, they just wear $10,000 dresses and too much makeup. It's harmless.
There are no dead animals involved in Bama Rush, right?
Yeah, in the cosmetic industry or something, right? It's just wild and in Stillwater. But what does the mullet say of this? Did the mullet have a statement? I need to know. All right, well, we're going to find out. We'll find out all of that. We have much more. We're going to go Tuesday, probably Thursday. The transfer portal is rocking. I mean, everything's happening.
Yeah.
We got coaching carousel. We got all sorts of things going on. So this season ain't over. And don't worry, the bowl bonanza is coming next week. That'll be two parts. So no better time to continue listening, subscribe, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. And we appreciate all of you. It's going to be a fun month ahead. We will talk to you later.